Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, how are you, sir? How are you? We're recording today after the Superb Owl. Did you watch any of it? Did you see any of it?
I didn't because I was actually working. I work on Sunday nights, so
what?
I missed it completely. I did. I watched like a couple of the movie trailers and things on YouTube today. So,
okay.
But that doesn't really count. I mean, did you watch, I assume?
Yeah. I mean, I watch it mostly out of habit at this point. Like, I'm not a huge, huge football guy, but like, I do like to see, you know, movie trailers and stuff like that. I'm a little bummed out that we didn't get any Marvel or DC stuff, but we did get that pretty cool.
We got a Supergirl trailer.
Yeah, that was during the Puppy Bowl, though, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, well, there's that, and it was super short too.
Barely, yeah. Well, I mean, those Super Bowl ads are expensive, so yeah, most movie trailers you're seeing are only going to be like about a minute long.
Yeah, but I did like that we saw that that Cliff Booth, Adventures of Cliff Booth trailer.
Yeah, I watched that today.
That looked kind of cool. I mean, it's. I mean, for those that don't know, so if you're a fan of the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Tarantino film, they're doing a spinoff to that where it's a whole different movie, but with Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, as the main character. Written by Tarantino, directed by David Fincher, and it'll be on Netflix.
Changeroo. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long, long time since we've seen a Quentin Tarantino script directed by somebody else. So
yeah.
that'll be very interesting to see. And I think those two will be a good matchup. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. So I mean, that was cool to see. One thing that wasn't cool to see is you didn't see it, but I did notice there were a good number of like AI program commercials.
I heard about that. Yeah,
like a lot of hey, download this AI software. And you won't have to work at all. And it's like, well, you won't be working at all once your boss figures out your fucking AI can do your job and kicks you out in your keister. And, you know, then you'll just be home twiddling your thumbs.
I understand there are also a lot of, like, creepily DH celebrities. I haven't looked at any of those ads yet, but...
Oh, yeah, the Dunkin' Donuts one. That one's pretty weird. It's like... it's Ben Affleck, but they have, like, a lot of 90s... sitcom stars in it, and they're all de-aged. Like, they have Jaleel White, who played Urkel, and Matt LeBlanc, who played Joey from Friends, and George Costanza from Seinfeld, and Jasmine Guy from A Different World, and they de-aged all of them, and then they de-aged Jennifer Aniston as Rachel. It's weird, and it's
sounds
really,
creepy.
It's creepy, and Carlton Banks is in it, too, and they're all de-aged, and the whole premise of the commercials like pretty convoluted and too busy. Not a fan of it.
Thumbs down from Darren.
Yes. That's my critique corner of commercials from Darren.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
How did you like the game itself?
Oh, right. There's a football game. That was all right.
All right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've noticed that too. Cause like on my social medias, it seems like more people talking about the halftime game than the actual game or the halftime show with the,
oh yeah. There's all that stupid controversy of like Bad Bunny and dumb people thinking like, oh, he's from Puerto Rico, therefore he's not American. And it's like, no, he is.
Puerto Rico is part of America, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. I
know.
You know what they mean when they say he's not American. They mean like, you know, he's not from the Midwest or, you know, he ain't no good old boy. Like my man Kid Rock over here, ball with down good day, baby, baby.
Yeah, not Caucasian enough for some people, apparently.
Yeah, so. You know, he don't drink no Coors Light or hanging out in a Ford Mustang in what have you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I heard I didn't watch the halftime show. I did check out the Green Day opening thing, but I haven't watched the Bad Bunny thing yet.
Yeah, I was a little surprised about that because Green Day been and they did songs from American Idiot, which is a very political song, and so I'm sorry they kicked it all off with that, where it's really just kind of going against the bullshit that we're up against these days, and like they're able to rock it out there. So it's like, all right, Green Day, rock! I see you, rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Go on, Billy Joe, do your thing, man. Mm-hmm. So that's our take on the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Yeah. There was a bunch of commercials.
There was some football in between.
Some football in between. Somebody was playing. I don't know. The Seattle SuperSonics. In the New England Colts, I don't know.
Yeah, and, no, that's it exactly. Yes.
Yeah, and then Bad Bunny came out, and Pedro Pascal was there. It was great.
Yeah, yeah,
fantastic.
Well, I feel like we've covered it thoroughly. So
I think we did. I think we did. ESPN, we await your call for with scintillating commentary like this. We're bound to be the next commentators on the sports, all sports network.
And you know, if you're a fan of bad commentary on events, this is a movie for you, because this week we are covering Chris Regas' Best in Show from 2000, which features, among many many other people, Fred Willard as a hilariously bad commentator.
Trumbull, you are smooth with the transitions, my man.
Thank you.
Just smooth as eggs. Look at you go. In honor of the late great Catherine O'Hara, we'll be talking about Best in Show, directed by Christopher Guest, written by Guest and Eugene Levy. Came out September 29th in the year 2000.
And you know, if you're wondering why we're not doing some of the other Christopher Guest movies that Catherine O'Hara was in, it was like, hey, why aren't you doing Waiting for Guffman? Why aren't you doing a Mighty Wind? Well, we've already done both of those, okay?
So yeah,
get off our case.
Yeah, shut the fuck up and get off our back, man.
We need you to, like, you're at like a 10. We need you at like a 2, okay?
Yeah, you're coming in hot.
Just calm down a little bit. We're professionals.
Yeah, we know how to do this. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
Don't get your britches in a knot.
You know, we need you to, like, take a few steps back. Mm-hmm. And just chill. Just think about your life for a minute, okay?
Yeah, chill, bro. Chill.
Anyway, so as luck would have it, this was the one Chris Regas movie. Or, well, I shouldn't say the one. He's done other movies. But of the major three, I would say, of his mockumentaries. The Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, Mighty Wind trilogy is how it's largely thought of.
Yeah, he did two others, but they're kind of...
But not, fuck those movies.
Yeah, well, I didn't say... I was trying to think of a nice way to say it. But yeah, fuck them.
I don't think I've seen either one of those. I haven't seen For Your Consideration. And what's the other one? I'm blanking on what the other one is.
Mascots.
Haven't seen that.
Yeah. I remember I saw For Your Consideration in the theater. I thought it was okay. Actually, that one, Catherine O'Hara, has a bigger role. She's pretty much the main character in it. She's like the lead.
But then what the hell are we doing here?
Well, no, I mean, just because, like, I was thinking about maybe doing that, but then I remembered, I saw that movie years ago in the theater. I thought it was okay. And I remember that movie not being very well received by critics. So I was like, I thought, well, if we're going to do Catherine O'Hara, I don't want to do a film that the critics, you know, weren't very kind to. And then the other film he did, Mascots, which went straight to Netflix. I definitely remember that one not being very well liked by a lot of people. And that one doesn't have Catherine in it at all. I think it only had like a few people from the Christopher Guest universe in it.
Yeah. It must be tough for him to try and fit everybody in. Because, like, I mean, this was the second mockumentary he directed after Waiting for Guffman. And he added a few more people into the ensemble this time around. Like, this was the first time that Jane Lynch worked with him. I mean, outside of, like, the commercial he directed her in. And
Jennifer Coolidge, I believe, is, like, her first time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jennifer Coolidge, apparently, she came in because through the American Pie movies, because she and Eugene Levy had both worked on American Pie.
Oh, that makes sense. So, okay.
Nice. Yeah. But I don't think they share any scenes together until whichever one of those, one of the later American Pie movies, they have like Jim's dad hook up with Stifler's mom.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all. Wow,
it might be American Reunion or something. Yeah, like they had to make Eugene Levy a widower to make that work.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't be fucking around on Jim's mom. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta, you know.
Yeah, so you got to offer so he can, he can get a piece.
Right. Because that's what those movies are all about.
That's right. Yeah, we want Eugene Levy to get some to knock some boots. So maybe we
But I don't think they shared a scene together in any of those American Pie movies until that. I'm gonna say fourth one.
I'll have to check my American Pie library.
It's tricky because, like, I know there were a bunch that were theatrically released, and there are also some direct to video ones. DVD ones.
Yeah, Eugene Levy was in a lot of those direct to DVD ones too, which I remember being like,
yeah.
Eugene, what are you doing, man? You don't have to do this, bro.
Hey, man.
You're all right? Work. Everything okay at home, man?
The American Pie people's money is as green as anybody else's.
I guess. Wow.
Look, I don't begrudge anyone wanting Eugene Levy in their movie. I don't begrudge Eugene Levy taking work where he can get it.
Yeah, that's
true. Take that money and run, brother.
That's true. I've done more for way less. You're right.
Yeah.
But we won't get into that.
But, you know, when I sat down to watch this movie, I was like, oh, hey, this will be great. I'm looking forward to revisiting this because I had, like, pleasant memories of it. And then I started the movie and I realized, I don't think I've seen this all the way through before.
What?
I think I had just seen so many clips of it that I just sort of, like, thought I'd seen the whole thing by osmosis. But no, I think this was my first time from beginning to end.
Interesting. Oh, wow. So this is the first time watch for you, my friend.
So I could have sworn I'd seen it at least once before. I think I might have owned this movie at one point, but I think I never got around to actually watching it from beginning to end. So.
Yeah, no, I remember this movie being a pretty big hit when it came out. Like Waiting for Guffman was like a modest, almost like underground hit, but this one, I think like the mainstream kind of caught on to this one.
I think Waiting for Guffman kind of primed the pump, and then this one. Yeah. I mean, Eugene Levy, who was like the co-writer of this with Christopher Guest, he said that, you know, he thought this was a more accessible mainstream film because just people love dogs so much, you know, not everybody's into community theater. So
fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Everybody loves a dog. Do you have a favorite breed of dog? Is there one of the dogs in this movie where you're like, oh, who's a good boy?
I mean, I like hound dogs. My family, we've owned a lot of beagles. And so I like those medium-sized dogs. I've had some encounters with some other breeds, and they're
oh, that sounds...
You know, like some other breeds, they're a lot more hassle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, say, you know, like one of those big furry dogs, one of those super drooly dogs. I don't want to call out any particular dog here, but there have been some like super drooly dogs, and I'm just like, yeah, these just are not as fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I know you're talking about, we don't want to do any dog slander.
But let me emphasize, all dogs are good dogs.
Yeah. Who's a good boy?
Yeah. They're all good boys.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Yes, you are. But I'm definitely a dog person, so I really enjoyed seeing this.
Yeah, same here. I love a good dog. You know, there's just something about them. I know there's dog people and cat people, and cats are like, well, you know, cats, you have to earn their affection. I'm like, fuck that noise. Just
fuck that. I want the unconditional love, man.
Thank you. Let's play fetch. Yeah. Come on, good boy. Like, dogs are fantastic. Come on, dogs are better. Done.
Yeah, dogs, 100% better. They are just so much better. It's not even a question, as far as I'm concerned.
Here.
What are you doing, cat people? What the hell are you doing? What are you thinking?
What are you doing with your life? What are you trying to? Why are you trying to get his or her affection? Affections of a cat? Come on, man. Life's too short for that shit.
Christopher Guest ain't making no movies about cat shows. Let me just say that.
Absolutely.
Do they have cat shows? They probably do, right?
I would imagine they must. They must have them somewhere. But I mean,
but nobody cares.
Yeah, and they're hard to train. Like, they don't do tricks on command. Cats just
No.
Do whatever they want to.
Is a cat ever going to bring you a stick? Hell no.
No. Just stare at you like you're nuts and lick his paws and go to bed.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's what a cat will do for you. Nothing. Yep. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, I will give cats this. I do like how they can be trained to poop in a box.
That's pretty great. All right.
That's nice. I mean.
That's 1 point for cats. Yeah. But they will eat up all your lasagna, too, which that's one minus.
That's true. That's true. And they torment stupid dogs named Odie.
Yes. I mean, they hate Mondays, which I understand, but.
Mm, yeah. So. I mean, I'm with cats there. Yes. Sure.
Mm-hmm. So best in show.
Best in show, doggies.
Yeah. So we start off with this couple. Meg Swan and Hamilton Swan, played by Parker Posey and Michael Hitchcock, talking to their therapist about their dog, who's been showing signs of depression and anger ever since she caught them having sex.
Yes.
They were doing some new Kama Sutra move called Congress of the Cow.
Sure. Which, I mean, she describes it, and I'm like, that honestly just sounds like doggy style to me.
It really does, right? It just...
I mean, I'm not like, totally up to date on all this stuff. It's been a while since I've cracked the covers of the Kama Sutra, but...
you don't have the new edition?
I don't. Have they added new stuff? They probably added new stuff since...
Maybe.
Yeah.
Could...
So, like I said, I'm probably really out of date, but...
Yeah, but, this is a pretty funny scene, because, like, it's them solemnly talking about how their dog is depressed. Mm-hmm. Over them walking in on them having Congress, and then they cut to the dog right next to them lying on a couch, like looking pretty bummed out.
It does look like a depressed dog. Yes, I will give him that. Yeah,
yeah. So far we're off to a rip roaring start. This is what the movie is.
So these are two of the dog owners that we're going to be following over the course of the movie. We've got another couple of dog owners in Fern City, Florida. We've got Jerry and Cookie Fleck, played by Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. And they're like this nice suburban couple. They've got a terrier named Winky.
Yes.
And we find out over the course of their initial interview, like, you know, Eugene Levy is playing this sort of nerdy guy, and Catherine O'Hara's character, Cookie, she apparently got around quite a bit back in the day.
She was very popular with
the boys. Say, like, she had dozens of boyfriends, and she quickly corrects him to hundreds. And from how many she runs into over the course of this hour and a half film, I can believe it was hundreds.
Yeah, she's very popular with the fellas back in her day, but she doesn't do that anymore. But the film makes it known that in her heyday, she was quite gifted with the coitus. I believe is the best way I could say
she,
that.
She probably did the Congress of the Cow.
She probably wrote the Congress of the Cow.
Probably did. Uh-huh. And Eugene Levy, Jerry, is this nerdy guy, and he literally has two left feet. They, like, pan down, they show he's got two left shoes.
So. Yeah, the kids used to call him Loopy.
Mm.
It's an odd trait, but it's one I kind of like, I guess, because it's like, oh, how many pairs of shoes does he have to buy just to match? You got to, like, buy two pairs of the same shoe.
I know. I mean, the shoe budget alone, it's got to be the burden.
Astronomical.
So we've got some other owners. We've got Christopher Guest, who's Harlan Pepper, and he's got a bloodhound. He runs like a fishing store, and he goes hunting with his bloodhound. And this is, I believe, his first time entering into a professional show. And you know, he's sort of this, I don't want to say country bumpkin type, but he's a southern gentleman.
He's a southern gentleman from Pine Nut, North Carolina. We get a Will Sasso sighting from Mad TV.
Will Sasso? I was like, is that Will Sasso? And I checked the credits, and sure enough, it's Will Sasso. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He has a few things to say. And, you know, Harlan Pepper, he loves his bloodhound. He says the bloodhound is the best dog on Earth. Even if they went to a different planet like Venus or Mars, you could still, you still couldn't find a better dog.
Yep.
Very nice. Yeah, it's interesting how Christopher Guest kind of gets into these worlds, these, I guess, these communities that maybe aren't super well known by the mainstream, and he kind of like kind of shines a light on them, but like he doesn't make fun of them. He rides that line of not making fun of them, but kind of just kind of showing how interesting and earnest and maybe even a little bit quirky they are.
Yeah,
he's good at that.
And speaking of quirky, we got Michael McKean and John Michael Higgins as a couple, Scott Dolan and Stefan Vanderhoof. And they cut hair and they groom dogs. They're in New York City, and they've got they've got a Shih Tzu that they're entering into the
competition. Yes, I every time I hear the name of that dog, I do a little part of me giggles a little bit, and I feel so childish, and I apologize. Yeah, guys. Yeah.
Well, you know, we are mentally 12.
Yes, exactly. So. But yeah, I like how John Michael Higgins plays the character Scott. Very. Flamboyant, I guess I could say. You know, it's like they're at the butcher shop getting meat, and of course he says something like, "Oh, just give me one of those pepperoni sticks. I just want to hold it."
Yeah.
And Stefan's like, "Please, will you stop it?" Just like little things like that, a little back and forth banter, and talk about how they met and how Scott used to be a wild man in his days. Then they cut to a picture of Scott dressed as Carmen Miranda, and he's spanking a man's bare bottom in someone's kitchen.
Sure, like, as you do.
Like, that's, all right, this is going to be quite the doc. All right. But yeah, we get to meet them. And then we go into Cabot Mansion in Philadelphia, where we see Jennifer Coolidge, who's played Sherry Ann Cabot, married to Leslie Ward Cabot.
Who's an older gentleman. She is, I think it's fair to say that she's like a trophy wife.
Yes, very much so. I was trying to figure out who this Leslie Ward Cabot, he seems like a character actor. Like, I've seen him in something before.
I've seen him in stuff. I wanted to say it was like Carl Oldie Olson from the Conan O'Brien show, but I don't think it was him.
Yeah, was it like maybe the guy that played Blue in Old School?
I think that's it. Let me see. I'm looking at the cast list on Wikipedia now.
Yeah, because I mean, Leslie, because like he doesn't have any lines in the movie at all. He just sits there all old.
Yeah.
Just kind of stares off.
He's just there being old. I don't think he's listed here on Wikipedia.
Patrick Cranshaw.
Okay. Boom. Did he also play Blue?
Let me see. Still looking. Yep, he did. It was Blue. Oh, I'm right.
Blue.
You're my boy, Blue.
All right. Well, that's why he looked familiar. Old School.
He was an Old School.
I believe we've covered that one, haven't we?
We have? I think so.
Yeah. That's so weird that we've done this podcast long enough that I can't remember offhand which movies we've done and which movies we have.
It's been a long, long road, my friend.
So let's see. Sherry Ann also has a trainer for her dog, and it's this big poodle called Rhapsody in White. And the dog handler is Christy Cummings, who's played by Jane Lynch, who runs a kennel. And Rhapsody in White has taken the prize like the last 2 years, so they're like gunning for a third.
Yeah, absolutely. Jane Lynch, always hilarious. I think she had some funny lines in here too. Like, she's talking about how, like, she had a close relationship with Sherry, and the two of them are like a family, and the dog is like their child. And it's like, oh, it's sort of like the family I grew up in, where my father was like the strict disciplinarian, which is like me, and my mother was the one giving unconditional love all the time. Like my mom was, like Sherry does. And like that worked out great for them until my mom committed suicide in 81.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
And Jane Lynch is so good at just like throwaway lines like that. And she can just deliver it in that sort of that false peppy manner. She's so good at that. Mm-hmm. And let's see who else we got. We got Bob Balaban, who's Theodore Millibank III, who runs the Mayflower Dog Show.
Yes.
No relation to the Westminster Dog Show.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. Any resemblance is purely coincidental.
Yeah. I mean, there are millions of dog shows out there. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the great Don Lake as Grant Chisholm, the Mayflower Show chairman.
Yeah.
Who's like kind of running things. And then we get to know our couple from the beginning of this film, Megan Hamilton Swan from Moordale, Illinois. A couple of these towns I've looked up. I don't think they actually exist. They just choose fictional towns.
I feel so betrayed.
I know. Fern City, Florida. Not a town.
Damn it.
Right?
What the hell?
I'm flabbergasted.
Yeah. Anyway, the Swans, they met when they were both going to a Starbucks, but they were two different Starbucks across from each other. And they are catalog people. They order things from L.L. Bean and Eddie Bauer and that sort of thing. They're very preppy. They're very a lot of tan, a lot of earth tones in their wardrobe.
Yeah, they both wear braces for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they really love shopping from catalogs. Like, oh, it's so much easier than dealing with people.
Yeah.
Which, I get that.
I get that. I got an Amazon delivery just today, and yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet. Didn't have to deal with people.
You don't have to talk to anybody. It's fantastic.
I know. It was nice. It was nice.
Yay. Isolation.
Yay.
Right.
So everybody, all the various characters, they're taking road trips to get to the show, the big show.
Yeah, Jerry and Cookie are going to drive. The big show is in Philadelphia. They're going to drive up. They're going to see the Liberty Bell. They're going to see where they make the cream cheese. Sure. And Cookie wants to drive to Akron, Ohio, to see one of her old friends, Max Berman.
Yeah, which played by Larry Miller.
Played by Larry Miller. And, of course, Jerry's like a little hesitant to do it because, like, yeah, Ohio is way out of the way. Like, Ohio's nowhere near Philadelphia. And we do also get to see them sing God Loves a Terrier, which is, you know, one of the first times we hear Eugene and Catherine Harris sing together before they go on to be in Mighty Wind, which is lovely.
Yeah. They stop and visit Max and his wife, Faye. His wife, Faye, is played by Lindy Cash. And Max is being very forward with Cookie. He keeps coming on to her throughout.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when they first meet, like, he literally just kisses her long and hard on the lips. Like, right.
Yeah, it's one of those kisses where he's like, puts his hand behind her back and kind of dips her down.
Yeah.
Is there a term for that type of kiss? I don't even know.
I don't know. It's like a ballroom.
It's kind of kiss like a hero would give to the heroine at the end of a movie or something.
Yeah, it's like that kiss that sailor kissed that lady in Times Square.
Oh, yeah. At the end of World War II. Yeah.
Yeah, like without her consent. It's like one of those kisses.
Yeah, yeah. That famous photograph that in retrospect is really super creepy because like that she didn't know the guy at all. and like if you look at her body language, she's just kind of like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. And yeah. which by the by, yeah, Max kisses Cookie right in front of Jerry. And I'm sorry, guys, bros, if you're listening out there in this podcast, if some bozo kisses your lady on the lips, you have to fight him. You gotta
throw her down.
You have to, down, man. He's going to catch these hands. All right.
That's right. That's right.
That's like he's smacking you with the white glove. You gotta knuckle up, and ask this motherfucker how many lumps he wants because you have to. You have to fight him.
Mortal. You do that in front of to Darren's wife in front of Darren. He's going to introduce you to Chester A. Arthur and Mallard Fillmore. Those are the names of his fists.
That's right. The deli's open, and I'm serving up knuckle sandwiches. Bah, bah, bah.
Right. Boom, that's right. Boom.
That's right. Welcome to the Terror Dome, motherfucker.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Welcome to the jungle.
Darren will body slam you, man.
That's right. I'll walk. You'll see me coming down the aisle like WWF style. Like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's Terry Patterson.
He's got a folding chair. He'll slam it over your head. Yeah. I've seen it happen. It's not pretty, folks.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's not pretty. That guy is still in traction.
Yeah. I strut down like the Macho Man and chick firework go off, shit's about to
pop. You have a feather boa that comes out of nowhere. I don't know where you get that. It just appears on you.
I keep it on me at all times. You never know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good. Yeah, because you never know.
That's right. Hey, sometimes you got to serve up a little justice, a little knuckle justice.
That's right.
That's right. So, this turned into like a Joe Rogan podcast for a minute. Wow.
So, yeah, we find out over the course of this incredibly awkward dinner that Max, Cookie's old boyfriend, he's a chief hostage negotiator. He's like, oh, yeah, here's a little secret of the trade. They always jump.
They all jump.
They all jump. He's like, he hasn't saved a single. And they also have a very odd child, their son, Zach, who takes the dog Winky outside. And then they find him and he's on the roof of their garage. And it's weird. It's a weird thing, but
it's a weird scene. Yeah. So like then they all run out and then Max tries to talk his son down off the roof. Mm-hmm. And of course he uses his hostage negotiator tactics and saying things like, I'm going to gouge your left eye out with my thumb, mister. If you don't come down, I'm going to stab you with a fork till you bleed.
Yeah. Just what you dream of hearing. I mean, when you're
of course
having a moment like that.
So he's not very good at his job.
No. So, you know, highly awkward evening there.
Speaking of awkward, you also see Harlan. He's taking a Winnebago up to Philly, and he's at one point he's practicing like his ventriloquism for a few minutes. Like he has like this huge ventriloquist dummy. Just a little odd hobby he has on the side.
Yep.
Yeah, just talking to your dummy at night.
Yep. We also meet Mark Schaefer, played by Ed Begley Jr., who's the manager of the Taft Hotel, where everyone is staying in connection with the show. And he talks about, you know, what a challenge it can be to have all those animals there. And he shows us all the cleaning products. And he talks about how a little while back they had a rock and roll band who was there. And they actually roasted what was the animal that they roasted? I'm forgetting now.
I think it was like a goat or something.
Yeah, it was they roasted a goat. And apparently this is a veiled reference to Spinal Tap. That trashed their hotel room and roasted a goat. So.
Oh, shit. That's kind of cool. Well, I totally did not catch that.
Yeah. Well, that's what it says on the IMDb trivia anyway. And why should I doubt them?
Yeah, I'll take their word for it.
Yeah.
All right, so then we see all the contestants we've been following get to the hotel in Philly. For some reason, Jerry and Cookie, when they get there, their credit card doesn't work and they don't have cash. Yeah. I think at one point Jerry asks, "Well, what about travel check? Do you take those?" He's like, "Oh yeah, we take that." And he's like, "Well, do you have any?" And Jerry's like, "No, actually, I do."
Yeah, it's like $300 cash to deposit for the room. They've only got like $34. So they end up being put in a utility closet. And
it's a pretty nice utility closet.
Yeah, they're going to clear it out and everything. They're right next to the kitchen.
Yeah. So. Yeah, just tell the waitstaff, you know, you want your food sent to utility closet. You know, it's the only one here, so they'll bring it right to you.
Yeah. Have sort of a cocktail hour event, so all of the dog owners can get to know each other before the event, before the show. And Catherine O'Hara had a really nice touch where she has her name tag, but she actually has it on her skin. Like she's wearing like sort of a scoop neck top. And she, instead of putting the name tag on her blouse, she puts it on her skin, which I've never seen anyone do before. But just, I really like that. It was a really nice touch.
Yeah, part of me was thinking, all right, what was the logic behind that? Maybe she doesn't want to get the sticky stuff on her top. So
I think it was just maybe she's, you know, maybe a bit of a bumpkin or something, you know?
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
I don't know. But I mean, it was just a nice, great, unusual touch. And it's never commented on. It's just, you just do a little double take. You're like, wait, is Cookie wearing her name tag on her?
On her body.
Yeah.
I did like, I mean, they kind of, like when they talk to Scott and Stefan, Scott like looks at her name tag and goes, oh, Cookie.
Oh.
But that's about it.
They, during the cocktail hour, they also meet another old boyfriend of hers from like 18, 19 years before, Malcolm, who, again, being very inappropriate with her.
I mean, he's banged a lot of waitresses in his day, but she was the best.
Yeah.
Which, again, Jerry, you gotta fight him. You gotta throw hands. You gotta put him in the cobra clutch. Yeah. Right now.
And, you know, guys, if you're meeting an old hookup of yours, and especially if she's with her current fella, maybe don't comment on all the stuff you did back in the day. Maybe just keep those as inside memories, you know?
Yeah, like, what do you hope to get out of that? Like, you just be like, hey,
he hopes to get a little more, is what he's hoping.
Yeah. Hey, this will be good for your ego. You're a great lay.
Yep.
I just had to tell you. It's like, really?
Did you? I mean, you know, if you have to tell him, maybe tell him privately.
Yeah. Just one-on-one. Mano a mano.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to know that.
So let's see. We see...
We see Harlan talking to Hamilton and Meg about fly fishing for hours on end.
Talking their ear off about it. We see Scott and Stefan, who are actually like decorating their hotel room. They've like brought tapestries from home. When we see them packing for the show, Stefan is saying to Scott, he's like, okay, you're packing like 7 kimonos for 48 hours. He's like, oh, do you think I need more?
We're going to be there 2 days. You're picking all these kimonos. Yeah, just doing costume changes like Diana Ross, this guy.
Right, yeah. And we see them in their hotel room, and they're like, they get on the phone with their other dog, Tyrone, and they're like saying goodnight to him.
Yeah. That's kind of sweet. To see how much they love their dogs. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the big show. And from what I remember, this was the moment a lot of people were talking about. Because for the announcers, we have Fred Willard as Buck Laughlin. Mm-hmm. And I remember a lot of people saying that Buck Laughlin really stole the show here, just with his random ad-libs left and right, just saying the most insane things, just not really knowing.
He's just so wonderfully ignorant. Like, apparently Christopher Guest told Fred Willard, don't prepare at all. Be as stupid and as ignorant as you possibly can. And then he told the other co-host, Jim Piddick, playing Trevor Beckwith, you're going to have to do research because you have to sound like you know what you're talking about. So,
and it works beautifully.
Yeah.
Because, like, we learned that Trevor Beckwith does own a number of dog obedience schools, and Buck talks about, I went to one of those schools, and everything was going well till they spilled hot wax on my privates.
Sure.
I'm just kidding you, Trevor. We have fun here.
Yeah. If you got to cast somebody to say hideously inappropriate things in your movie, you can't do much better than Fred Willard, I would say.
Yeah, like at one point he just asks Trevor, hey, just ballpark figure, how much you think I could bench press? Just a roundabout of Trevor's like, what? Yeah, just a number. Just give me a number. How much do you think I can deadlift? Go.
So we go into a section of the movie, we do like, you know, the first round, and we have 7 divisions of dogs. And you know, each of the couples that we've met is in their own division. So we've got the hound group, and Harlan Pepper and his bloodhound, they move on. We've got the toy group, Scott and the Shih Tzu move on. We've got the terrier group, Winky, the Norwich Terrier from Jerry and Cookie, moves on. We got a bit of a curveball with the sporting group, with the Swans, who before they go on, they can't find their dog's favorite toy, which is a little bumblebee,
right?
A little squeaky toy. And apparently that really calms their dog down. And Meg goes back to the hotel room to try and find it. She goes to a pet store that's nearby to try and find a replacement, but she can't find a matching item.
Yeah, she goes like full Karen on everybody. She does.
And apparently they edited out scenes of her like taking drugs so that they could preserve a PG rating.
Oh,
I read. Yeah.
Really? So,
I don't know what she's on, but it just said that she's taking some sort of drugs, and they had to remove those scenes to preserve the rating. So
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah, so maybe that explains some of her slightly erratic behavior.
Oh, she's whacking us a junk.
Yeah.
Right. I hear you. All right.
So when Weinenharmer, their dog, is in the sporting group, they Hamilton can't control their dog, and so their dog is disqualified.
Yeah, the dog like jumps on the judge, and
yeah,
you know, of course, Bug is like, "Whoa, that, he went after her like she was made out of ham."
Yeah, yeah, and that was good. I like that they gave us a little bit of a curveball because this middle section it is kind of predictable because otherwise it's like all the people are following all their dogs move on, of course,
right?
And we see Jennifer Coolidge as Sherry Ann. She's like very nervous. So we see her out. She's out getting popcorn, and her dog Rhapsody in White is in the non-sporting category, and she moves on.
Yeah, yeah. Like I think Jennifer Coolidge's character kind of takes on this trait of just eating a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I noticed like around this point, because like then towards the end of the movie, she is eating more and more. So I was like, oh, is that like a new?
Yeah, she's eating yogurt. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, is that like a new trait that they just kind of added on?
Could be. Yeah.
It kind of threw me off a little bit, but it's interesting.
But but Sherry Ann's very nervous about it. But Jane Lynch is like, you know, an old pro, it's the handler. And Rhapsody in White moves on. And then we see the two of them right afterwards, and the camera catches them in a passionate embrace.
A lover's embrace, the love that dare not speak its name.
So and, yeah, so they, yeah, you know, they develop feelings for each other.
Yeah, the camera catches it. I think Scott and Stefan see it too. It seems like they might have cut out a little bit more because it seems like Scott and Stefan know all about Christy Cummings. She seems to have like some type of reputation, but the movie never really goes into that reputation, like how she's known in these circles or anything like that. And it seems like Scott and Stefan aren't super fond of her, like the way they talk about her or anything like that. So like when they see her and Sherry Ann like embrace in a lover's embrace, and they're like, oh, Rhapsody has two mommies now.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting. And and then we hear some other Buck Laughlin, non sequiturs, like talks about an idea he has for a book called "Women Bathing Their Dogs." You know, like you get water all over. You know,
it's soapy, soapy. And I'll let you use your imagination. Yeah,
yeah. And one, I don't know why I laughed at this, but when Megan Hamilton's dog jumped on the judge, and the judge was dog was dismissed. He says something like, "Oh well, he's still a champion, even though he was." Sent off in disgrace, like Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. We still talk about him.
I was like, Shoeless Joe Jackson. Oh, Fred Willard, you magician.
Yeah, yeah. So we're down to the last seven dogs, and just before the final judgment, Cookie trips and messes up her knee. Her knee's swollen up, so they convince Jerry that he's going to be Winky's handler.
Yeah, like it when they show Cookie trip, she really didn't trip over anything. Like there wasn't anything in her way. She just trips for out of nowhere, and then and Jerry has to trot out Winky. Yeah. And like that's when Buck notices that Jerry has two left feet, and this is when we get the big tension, the big moment where. All the people we've been following around to see which one wins the best in show.
Yeah, it's very suspenseful.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. Were you rooting for any particular dog at this point in the movie? When you first saw the movie, I would say.
I guess I would probably root. I would have been rooting for Cookie and Jerry's. I'm assuming Christopher Guest wrote it. For like Cookie and Jerry's dog to be the one, because like they seem to be the one, like if you had to pick from any of them, like that would seem to be the one most people would be rooting for, because like it's kind of apparent that Christy Cummings is like somewhat of the villain, I guess, of this movie.
Well, also, it's that's one of those overly fancy poodles.
She comes from.
Again, all dogs are good dogs, but poodles, they're down there.
Yeah, she's got the born with the silver spoon, and it's
poodles. What are you doing, people?
Yeah, what are you good for?
Yeah, so absolutely nothing. Say it again. No.
Yeah. So I would probably be rooting for Jerry and Cookie.
Well, that's kind of convenient because Jerry and Cookie win. Winky wins the whole show, man.
What?
I know. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I know. Yeah, everyone's really shocked and surprised, and Jerry and Cookie are very pleasantly surprised, and yeah, it's kind of cool. So
yay. Fantastic! Yay! Yay! Winky! Good dog. She's a good dog.
And then we catch up on everybody 6 months later. Jerry and Cookie have become kind of celebrities back in Fern City. They've done a lot of interviews, radio appearances.
Three radio interviews.
That's right. That's right.
Had a picture in the paper. Got a key from the city by the mayor.
Yeah. And they've decided to record their songs that they've written about terriers, and they're doing an album.
Yeah, under the name The Captain and Cookie. Album title, Beg for It.
Yeah. And while they're recording one of their terrier songs, the sound engineer recognizes Cookie
from back in the day. Damn it!
She just can't go anywhere.
Why?
Yeah. Then we follow up on Christy and Sherry Ann. They are now together. They are officially a couple now. I guess Sherry Ann just kicked her husband to the curb.
Yeah, part of me was wondering. That's one thing I would say about this movie. Like, I kind of wish they just said or did something to wrap that part up. Like, saying like, "Oh yeah, Leslie passed away, and now I discovered I love Christy," or something. Like a little sentence like that. Like explaining what happened to the marriage between her and Leslie, because they seem to be so in love. Are you trying to tell me love is dead, John? They seem to be so into each other.
I feel like maybe not love as an abstract concept is dead, but the love between that husband and that wife, that is definitely dead.
They even said that they could, they have so much in common. They both like soup.
Both talk or not talk.
Yeah,
they could not talk for hours. So I don't really see where those two went. Those two crazy kids went wrong.
I thought they would have gone the distance, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
But Christy and Sherry Ann, they seem very happy together, and they are publishing a magazine called American Bitch.
Yeah,
focusing on the lesbian purebred dog owner.
Wow. They're already
on their third issue, so I guess it's a bi-monthly magazine.
Yeah, that's a very niche market, but they're filling it. Then we go to Harlan, who was on an El Al flight to Haifa after the show, and he spent 3 weeks on a kibbutz.
Yep.
That's kind of random.
Very random, yeah.
So random! I was like, what the kibbutz? What the fuck?
And then he realizes, like, hey, I have a lot to offer. I'm going to work on mastering ventriloquism. And then we see him performing
poorly.
For a group of veterans, I'm assuming. And he's doing bad ventriloquism act. And then he like puts the dummy down on a chair so he can do a bad lasso trick.
Yep.
It's not good. It kind of reminded me of like, Albert Brooks's great ventriloquist act where he just like dropped the dummy to the floor.
This is the real me.
Yeah.
Then we got Scott and Stefan, who are working on a dog calendar where they're recreating all these scenes from old movies with their dogs, like Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, and of course, McMillan and Wife.
McMillan and Wife, which, not a movie. But I guess they're just big McMillan and Wife fans. They just love Rock Hudson and Susan St. James.
As soon as I saw the McMillan and Wife, what the fuck?
Well, actually, I guess if you're stretching the definition of movie, because it was part of the NBC mystery movie, it was part of The Wheel along with Columbo and McCloud, I think. Those were the three that started.
McCloud?
Yeah. I never watched much of McMillan and Wife.
Me neither. I mean, I know it's a TV show. That's the only thing I know about it. But like,
I think he's like a police commissioner or something, and then she's his wife, and
hence the title.
And they like solved mysteries together. And then at some point, Susan St. James didn't come back or was fired for some reason, so just became McMillan. And I think he became a widower.
Oh, McMillan, no wife.
Yeah, McMillan, no wife. Yeah. Oof. So,
wow, that's a bummer.
So I don't know. I'm over here watching Columbo.
That's right. Stick with the classics.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and folks, if you haven't watched any Columbo, get off your ass.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck is?
What are you doing with your life?
Fuck are you doing with your life? Just hanging out with your cat? That thing's not gonna love you.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And you know what else is cool about Columbo? Had a dog.
Fucking
an awesome dog.
Yeah.
Had a big basset hound.
Oh, basset hound.
You know what the basset hound's name was? Dog.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who's a good dog? You are. You're a good dog. You're a good dog. Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Go get it.
He's a great dog. And in our full circle moment, we see the Swans. They are back in therapy. They've got a new dog named Kipper, who apparently doesn't mind at all when they have sex in front of him. You know, they're like, no, he's actually into it. And then we cut to Kipper, and it's a little pug dog, and he's like humping the leg of the therapist.
Yeah. Like, we never find out what, I guess it just Megan Hamilton just gave away their dog or something.
I don't know. You know, maybe they upgraded or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But then we also notice that they're wearing bright colors now, just like bright blues and reds. They just did like a whole 180.
They're in a whole different headspace now.
That's right. So like all their problems was because of their dogs, not them. It's the dog's fault.
It's the dogs. Yep.
Yep. And that's the end of the movie. I mean, Best in Show still holds up. Still a pretty hilarious film. I mean, you know, the great Catherine O'Hara, just, you know, it's fantastic, and it still seems everybody does some really great work in it, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of these three, I think my favorite is still A Mighty Wind. I think that's the one that I find the most fun and I find the most funny. But you can't go wrong with any of these three.
Yeah, I would agree. A Mighty Wind is, I thought A Mighty Wind was something special. Mm-hmm. Like it's definitely my favorite out of the three, just because it also has a lot of heart in it too, like with the, you know, with the folk singing and like that one song with Mitch and Mickey singing and, you know, Kiss at the End of the Rainbow, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
we have a sort of pseudo Spinal Tap reunion as the Folksmen.
Yes, absolutely. With
Christopher Guest and Michael McKean and Harry Shearer. You know, that's pretty awesome.
Full circle, man. Full circle, baby.
Yeah, it's just great. But, I mean, again, you can't go wrong with any of these films, I would say.
Yeah, like, can't go wrong with anything here. You know, it's one of the films Catherine O'Hara was most well-known for. Like, you know, if you want to see more of her work, of course, you know, people say Home Alone, Beetlejuice were great showcases of what she could do. I would say
SCTV, Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, I would say Schitt's Creek is really
would. That is so like you, Darren.
I got to be me, baby. I got to be me. And like, if you go, I would say also go all the way back to SCTV because she really showcases some, like, what she can do and her comedic chops and really that's some of the
I've been watching the odd clip or two of her on YouTube over the last couple of weeks, and there's a hilarious clip of her on Martin Short's talk show when he was what was the name of his overweight
Jiminy Glick
Jiminy Glick and Lala Wood, and she comes on as the guest, and like the two of them, and again, it's just totally improvised, and the two of them just playing off each other because they've known each other for so long.
Right.
Hilarious.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, they got that Canadian connection, that old improv Godspell connection. They've known each other for ages, so they just know each other's rhythms. And yeah, it's pretty flawless.
Yeah. I don't want to say more to ruin it, but Google Jiminy Glick and Catherine O'Hara. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, like I've noticed online, like a lot of people have been sharing a lot of her old SCTV clips, like her as Lola Heatherton, her Brooke Shields impression. Mm-hmm, I think at one point they show her singing Devo's Whip It, just like doing some weird gonking off dance throughout it. Yeah, she was fantastic. She was
recently in the studio. She was great in the first season of the studio. I'm gonna miss her when that show comes back. So
yeah, no, she's great in the studio. I mean, The Last of Us, she's like a lot more serious and subdued, but she does have a few funny one-liners here and there. You see some sparks, but you know, you can only, it's as funny as you can be in a fucking zombie apocalypse TV show, but like,
sure. Yeah.
But yeah, like, but even like the serious stuff, she's able to do really well. And
yeah,
yeah, it's a bummer that she's gone.
But, she's just awesome. Yeah, just you know, left too soon. But I mean, absolutely. What a career she had.
Absolutely. So we put the word out on the Blue Skies. I don't think we got anything there, but I also put the word out on the Facebook, and we got some responses from the Facebook.
Oh, curveball! All right.
Yeah. So our good friend Shari Fesco says, I am all about a guest mockumentary, and being a huge dog lover, this one is a favorite. I think guest really hits on how obsessed we dog owners can be. I feel like this is not far from the reality of the dog show world. The whole cast shines here, as always, Catherine is hilarious. She was a comic gem and will be sorely missed.
Yeah, well said, well said. Absolutely. Yeah, this really does have a truth to it about how people can just baby their dogs, or, you know, they think the sun rises and sets behind their dogs, and, you know, your dog is always better than everybody else's dog.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know too many people like that in my life, but I've seen people like down the street, like, dress their dogs in like booties, or maybe put them in a stroller or some shit like that, where I'm like, that's not your child. Let's stop.
You know, I get it. I follow a few dogs on Instagram, you know?
Oh, okay. Oh, you follow dogs on the IG?
A couple, you know, if they're dogs of friends of mine, or if they're dogs that I've met. And yeah, sure, I'll follow. I'm not just going to follow random dogs.
I don't know. You like dogs. Maybe you follow some randos. Yeah, maybe you follow some randos. Yeah. Nothing wrong with following some randos.
Yeah.
It's cool, man. And then we have our good friend Steve Harold saying, Waiting for Guffman was the best of the guest-directed films. Each got a little less funny until Mascots, which was really bad.
Wow.
Okay. Side note, I posted this clip of her from the new show. I made copies of all the episodes when I was working at Broadway Video. Y'all probably dig. And he gives us a clip from, for those that don't know, the new show is the show Lorne Michaels did after he left SNL in the early 80s that Catherine O'Hara was on. And the new show was a show that wasn't a, success.
Yeah.
But it had
and actually, you know, we should probably just note for the record that Catherine O'Hara came like this close to being an SNL cast member. She was actually cast for season 6 and then she left and like went back to SCTV before she ever did an episode.
Yeah. And like, I guess she says she left because now she felt like, she felt like she was sort of abandoning her Canadian brethren back in. In the Great White North. But then I also heard that, like, she was kind of scared off by Michael O'Donohue, which, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was, like, I think when he spray-painted Danger on the wall at 30 Rock, and he was like, this is what the show lacks.
Spray paint? Yeah. All right.
No, Danger.
I see. Oh! Okay, that makes sense, yes.
No. He was, like, apparently Michael O'Donohue came back to the show, and he was like, let's give it a Viking funeral, and let's go down guns a-blazing. And
yeah, he was.
Yeah, I can see how he might be so radical he could scare someone off. I don't know how much truth there is to that. There are conflicting accounts about it, so I don't know.
Yeah, he was a bit intense.
Yeah, but it's interesting to ponder how different the history of SNL or comedy in general might have been if Catherine O'Hara had decided to stay and be an SNL cast member. Would she have stayed on for several years? Would she have become an even bigger star even sooner? I mean, who knows?
Sliding doors, man. Sliding doors.
Sliding doors. Yeah, she could have been like Gwyneth Paltrow with a different haircut.
Exactly. See, you get it.
Yeah. I've never seen that movie. Is that any good?
I've never seen it. I just know the reference.
I know she does an English accent, and I know she gets like a different haircut in one of the timelines, so you can tell them apart easily.
Right. Yeah.
But I've kind of stayed away from it because, you know, the Gwyneth Paltrow of it all.
Oh, you're not a big Paltrow head? You're not a Paltrow-holic?
Yeah, you know. I mean,
okay.
Come on.
enough.
I mean, do I have to explain why? You know, you get it.
I could see. I'd be actually shocked if you were a Gwyneth Paltrow fan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the goop of it all, the unconscious coupling of it all, that, you know.
Yeah, like, she's...
No, thank you.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Okay. I hear you. And Best in Show. Check it out, guys. Right now, as of this recording, you can find it on Netflix. It's on HBO Max. And you can also see it for free on Pluto TV if you don't want to pay for any streaming. So there you go.
So go for the free shit.
Yeah, that's right. Don't pay for shit.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. It's better when it's free.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that's it. That's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast, as always. You can follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this nonsense on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. And as always, you could...
There's a whole playlist of everything we've done.
We got it all.
If you want to hear more Christopher Guest movies, you can hear us talk about Waiting for Guffman and Mighty Wind. And stuff, and you know, we'll probably do others later.
We might finish it up. We might do mascots and For Your Consideration. Who knows? Who knows?
That's right? Yeah, you never know. You never know.
Who the fuck knows? And and as always, you can follow me on all the social medias at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
You can follow me on all the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And SNL. They're still off right now because we got the whole Winter Olympics thing going on. So what are we going to do? What is a notable thing in February that we could cover and we could find some movie relating to that? Do you have any ideas?
I have an idea. It's an idea we've been talking about and we joked about, and I feel like I say we do it. This might be a controversial one. We don't shy away from controversy here, but
no, we don't. We don't. We run towards controversy. We're like moths to the flame. So lay it on me, man. Let me hear this controversial choice.
So it is Black History Month.
There is a
comedy that's very controversial, and
but it speaks to the core of the Black experience.
That's what I'm told. Right? I don't think I've ever really seen this in its entirety.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but this film, it had a bit of a history. Did not age well. Ladies and gentlemen, boys,
I don't think it was good at the time.
Huh?
I don't think it was good at the time, Darren.
Yeah, no, this one, I'm looking at it now. Like, it's making me I'm a little nervous about this one, but in a good way.
Yeah, I didn't realize you hadn't seen it before.
I think I saw bits and pieces of it. I don't think I saw the whole thing.
Okay, all right.
But, folks, we're going to do it. We're doing Soul Man, the movie with C. Thomas Howell, Ray Dong Chong, James Earl Jones.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, our SNL.
Apparently you have to have three names to be in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. James Earl Jones, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Ray Dong Chong.
G. Gordon Liddy. G.
Gordon Liddy.
I'm trying to think.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They're all here.
Yep.
Soul Man.
If you're not familiar with Soul Man, it is a movie from the mid-1980s where C. Thomas Howell plays a gentleman who is trying to get into college, some prestigious college, like I think Harvard, maybe.
I
can't remember. But he doesn't get in, so he decides to take a bunch of tanning pills and pretend to be a Black student so that he can get a scholarship.
Jesus.
For the most deserving Black student. So, you know, I don't see why this would be problematic in the least.
Jesus Christ. Wow. Yeah, I don't think I've sat down and watched the whole thing. But
I don't think I've seen it probably since the 80s. I do remember certain bits of it very well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of it online. There's this one still shot of C. Thomas Howell as the black man. He's dressed as a pimp.
I mean, it's totally convincing, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he can pass.
Yeah, but yeah, he's dressed as a pimp and eating watermelon.
Yes.
Wow, this is. Oh boy, this I'm gonna
have to take the context of that. I'm not gonna ruin it for you though.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to take this movie to task, man. This will not
I feel like this will inspire discussion.
Yes. I think we're both gonna feel very awkward about this movie, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
What if
we just came back next week and I'd be like, yeah, I don't see what the big deal is.
Well, you can't make movies about this no more.
This is totally okay. What's your problem, Darren?
See, the woke left don't want to talk about serious issues like this. You can't do nothing. You can't have no fun no more. Yeah.
But I remember, like you said, some things that have not aged well, but I do remember it being amusing in a few places, too. So,
okay, well, let's...
You know, shrug, we'll see on which side it falls. So
we will get into it. Guys, tune in and listen. I think the movie's up, the whole thing is up on YouTube for free. So if you guys want to watch it and share your thoughts, please feel free.
So we're solving racism next week.
We're doing folks. It'll all be over by my birthday.
We're all gonna take care of it all. Everybody's gonna get along a-okay after this.
That's right. So. Gonna hold hands, sing kumbaya. It's gonna be wonderful.
Yep.
Smile on your brother. Everybody come together.
So that'll be next week. Soul Man, check it out. It's on the YouTube. And we'll be talking about it. We'll be taking it all apart. We'll be putting it back together again. So join us for that, won't you? Darren, you got anything else before we sign off for the week?
I'm just preparing myself for Soul Man.
You're just stealing yourself. Yeah, gird your loins, sir.
Ooh.
So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy.
It's going to be a journey.
Ooh.
All right. So, join us next week for Soul Man. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.